With the latest agriculture news from across the state and nation, it's time for the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Hey everyone, Danielle Leal here, and thanks for getting your agriculture news with me today. Despite summer heat, a cooler season delays wine grape harvest. North Coast vineyards are preparing for a late wine grape harvest after a cold and overcast spring slowed fruit growth in the prized wine region. Local growers say this could be the coolest start to a Napa Valley wine grape season in many years, with harvest delayed by at least 3 weeks. Jim Pratt, owner of Cornerstone Certified Vineyard in Sonoma County, says, quote, "I don't think we'll get busy until mid-September." With a late harvest, growers must manage their grapes through fall months, and that brings the potential for damaging rains and devastating wildfires. That was today's California Farm Bureau Food and Farm News Report, and now let's get into today's show headlines. Minimum wage to increase again in California. After 6 years of mandatory phased-in increases to the minimum wage to meet the $15 requirement, California will now endure another wage rate increase. Beginning January 1st of 2024, the minimum wage rate in California is set to increase to $16 an hour. That's 50 cents higher than the current rate. This is for non-exempt employees. It also increases salary to $66,560 for exempt employees per year. According to Labor Code Section 1182.12, the Department of Finance determines whether or not economic conditions can support a statewide minimum wage increase. And although the Federal Bureau noted a consumer price index increase of 6.16%, California law limits the minimum wage increase to 3.5%. That is what sparked the additional wage increases. Next November, California voters will also vote to raise the statewide minimum wage to $18 an hour by January 25 for large employers and January 26 for small employers. Stay tuned as we'll have more on this topic in the coming shows, but for right now, here's back-to-back reports with AgNet West, Brian German.
A well-functioning supply chain is critically important for the U.S. cotton industry. Senior Government Relations Representative with the National Cotton Council, Robbie Minnick, said exporting roughly 80% of the cotton grown in the U.S. hinges on reliable transportation.
Really all modes of transportation, not just ports, so that's certainly a key piece of it, but trucking, rail, ports. It gives U.S. cotton producers a competitive advantage that when we say that we can deliver cotton to textile mill, whether it's in North Carolina or whether it's in Vietnam, that we get it there when we say we're going to get it there and when the mill's needed. It's really important that all of these different modes of transportation get back to the levels that they were several years ago, pre-pandemic, so that we can keep that competitive advantage moving forward.
The Vineyard teams just announced the lineup of speakers who will be presenting at this year's Sustainable Ag Expo. For 18 years, the Sustainable Ag Expo has brought together farmers, ag professionals, and pest control advisors to learn about the latest in farming research, resource issues, and business trends related to sustainable agriculture. The two-day event will be taking place November 14th and 15th at the Madonna Inn Expo Center in San Luis Obispo. The event's also expanding its online course this year, offering to include 10 hours of content available from October 16th through November 30th. The program features viticulture experts from preeminent universities, along with representatives from USDA and CDFA. The program includes information on the latest research and field-tested practices in areas such as precision agriculture, rootstock research, weed management, and climate-smart practices. More information is available at sustainableagexpo.org. I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Thanks, Brian, and stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
GMOs? Genetically engineered, bioengineered, what's what? Well, GMO stands for genetically modified organism. It's the common term many people use for foods created through a process scientists call genetic engineering. And you'll start seeing bioengineered on some food packages. To let you know the product, or some of its ingredients come from GMOs. Feed your mind with more GMO knowledge on FDA's website.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal, tossing it right on over to Sabrina Halverson with today's National Spotlight.
In today's National Spotlight, after this week's Farm Bill Roundtable with ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, John Bozeman of Arkansas, I was able to meet with the senator and I asked him about the place of California's specialty crops in the Farm Bill.
I think the specialty crops are going to grow with all of the emphasis on food as medicine, And then, too, the fact that when you look at the problems that California has with land values, that's a problem throughout the country, but California, Florida in particular. And then, too, just climate, what has happened there. So as a result, I think we're going to see opportunities for the rest of the country to participate more. One of the things that we can do that's not going to cost anybody any money, that's just an efficiency thing, is when we actually have produced a lot of programs that help small specialty crop producers. They don't use them because they're so complicated. People that are into the commodity programs, the row crops, they understand how to work the system. For generations, they've been doing this. These smaller producers that we desperately want, that we're trying to encourage, they simply can't participate because it takes, a team of accountants to figure it out. The other problem that we have with USDA is that it's much easier to get a bigger grant when you're looking at conservation programs. They come in, they just need a little bit of money, which is a big deal to them, but it's almost like it's not worth the hassle of USDA to fool with. So we hear this all the time from small producers and things, and that's the value of getting out, going throughout the country, having the hearings that we've had. We've done a really good job of that. I've talked to our new assistant secretary, Torres Small. She's very interested in this. It shouldn't be that if you're in rural America and you're trying to get a grant, you're a mayor, and there's so much in the Farm Bill that's not just crops, it's about rural America. It shouldn't be that you have to hire a grant writer to be able to fill the form out. So those are things that we're going to be working on. Those don't cost money. That's efficiency. And it's something that we simply are going to do.
The topic of trade and the nation's competitiveness around the globe was brought up several times during the roundtable. The roundtable was held in Fargo, North Dakota, which is the leading state for sunflower production. This comment is from a representative of the sunflower industry.
It's a little bit surprising, and that is, I've been in the business for a long time. In 10 of the last 12 months, the United States has imported more agricultural products than we've exported. And that is, we used to be the one shining star that we always exported more products than we imported. And that is kind of alarming.
This was the response from Senator Bozeman.
That's really important. We're blessed. We've got the ability. That just shouldn't happen. And so it's really just one of the few times in history that it has happened. It's happened very infrequently. This will be a record this year. Last year was a record. This will beat it. And you say, John, we're not going to get ourselves in a situation where we're importing our food like we did with our oil. So, but that can happen. And so this is something we need to look at. The administration, and I don't mean to be partisan in this way, but they really aren't doing a very good job with trade at all. And so I think a lot of my Democrat friends would agree with that this is just something that they're not very interested in doing. So we've got to get on the stick.
That's today's National Spotlight. I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
Thanks, Sabrina. And now for today's livestock report, here's Randall Wiseman.
Well, in today's livestock news, red meat buyers from Central and South America and the Caribbean recently met with U.S. suppliers in Colombia during the 11th edition of the U.S. Meat Export Federation's Latin American Product Showcase, 70 U.S. exporting companies exhibited at the showcase. 220 importers had the opportunity to meet the U.S. suppliers and arrange purchases on a wide range of U.S. red meat products. The value and versatility of underutilized pork, beef, and lamb cuts were a focus of the educational activities during the showcase. U.S. industry leaders in attendance also toured a distribution center and several types of retail outlets. Randy Spronk, who serves as USMEF chair-elect, attended the event. He said it's just phenomenal seeing the growth that's happening in these countries. Spronk said it's great for those that fund USMEF to be able to see what those funds actually do and the return on their investment. Now, the 2024 Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is coming up January 31st through February 2nd in Orlando, Florida. And the National Cattlemen's Beef Association is reminding producers that registration for the event will start August 15th at 12 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. CattleCon 24 is offering an educational package that's designed for cattlemen and women of any age looking to learn, network, and take part in the full experience. The package includes all Cattlemen's College sessions, lunches and receptions, all general sessions, business and committee meetings, Thursday and Friday night events, entry to the NCBA trade show, and the trade show lunches and receptions. Plus, they're offering a family package this year, as kids under 12 are free. Or if you're looking to skip the meetings and just walk around the NCBA trade show, they're offering a trade show only registration that's available in one day and multi-day options. To learn more, go to ncba.org. And the U.S. House Ag Committee spending bill will be considered, of course, next month in September after Congress returns from their month-long summer recess. The National Pork Producers Council notes that House Republicans did try to vote back in July on the fiscal 2024 appropriations legislation for agriculture, rural development, food and drug administration, and related agencies, but deep spending cuts and dozens of controversial and non-agricultural amendments included in it stalled the action on the bill that funds the U.S. Department of Agriculture, FDA, and their programs. Of course, the Senate is also working on its own ag appropriations legislation. It has spending levels higher than the House, but none of the amendments. NPPC notes they are tracking all of this because the annual ag appropriations law funds federal programs that support farmers, including farm loans, agricultural research, and foreign animal disease prevention. The current measure expires September 30th, and failure to pass a fiscal 2024 appropriations bill could lead to a partial government shutdown. NPPC, of course, does support funding in the Ag Appropriations legislation for the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank, the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, and the National Veterinary Stockpile. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
An unprecedented amount of federal funding is available to expand broadband connectivity across rural America. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. Rick Zimmerman is Vice President of State Affairs for NCTA, the Internet and Television Association. He says federal investments can be used most wisely to help close the digital divide that still exists.
I think there's really three key things from our perspective. One is to really focus on the unserved. Two, to avoid waste, fraud, and abuse, and three, to work with experienced, trusted broadband providers. I think those are the three keys for making this money go a long way.
Rural residents without access to high-speed broadband can take steps to move the process along.
One is that even individual unserved homes are eligible this time around. That's kind of new for these kind of programs. Reach out to your state broadband office.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
This is the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen. Drones are becoming more popular as a tool for use in a farming or ranching business, but their use can raise legal issues. Drones can have many uses on a farm or ranch. They can be used for such things as mapping and scouting fields, crop spraying and monitoring, determining crop height and density, checking water levels in soil so that irrigation water can be used more efficiently, weed control, as well as the monitoring of livestock and wildlife. They can also be used to take pictures of your property before and after storm damage to help substantiate your loss. But drones can also be used improperly, especially ones with cameras. Clearly, a drone cannot be used to invade any place where someone has a reasonable expectation of privacy. That includes a person's home and the immediate surrounding area. But crop fields and livestock pastures might be treated differently under the open fields doctrine as areas that are in plain sight. While a drone's invasion in these areas could be a civil trespass, it wouldn't be criminal. In any event, don't attack the drone. That can get you in trouble. Try to determine who the owner is and take a photo or video of it flying in a manner that suggests it is being used to invade your privacy. If you then are not able to satisfy your concerns privately, the local authorities could be of assistance. This has been the Agricultural Law and Tax Report. I'm Roger McCohen.
This time last year, regarding farmland values,
we had this big run-up in our farmland values. They actually shot up a whopping 12.4% in 2022. Cropland values in particular were above 14% year-over-year growth.
Sean Arita of USDA's Office of the Chief Economist explained some of the factors behind that growth.
We had record farm income. Commodity prices were very, very high. Corn and wheat prices in particular, they had shot up following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And at that time, at least during the first part of that year, the Fed really hadn't started raising their interest rates.
So what type of growth in farmland values were then recorded in 2023 per USDA?
The average farmland value is about $4,048 per an acre. This is up from last year, so it's up about 7.4%.
And while lower growth was noted year over year, Arena says the rate of growth in farmland values remained strong.
The 7.4% on top of the 12.4% we had last year, that's still very, very strong. I would describe it as being very resilient to some of those headwinds that were in play.
The breakdown by cropland values and pastureland values look like this.
For the cropland values, this year we are at $5,460 per an acre. That's a $410 per an acre increase, or 8.1% from the previous year. The pasture side, NAS is reporting $1,760 per an acre. This is a $110 increase, or 6.7% increase from 2022.
Meanwhile, USDA also looked at how cash rents of farmland changed year over year.
The numbers that were just released show that the cash rents are coming in at 5%. That's kind of in line with what we saw last year. Again, still lower than what we saw on the value side, which is above 7% again. So the cash rentals, it's weaker for the third consecutive year as opposed to the value side.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Why do you listen?
I typically listen here at work from my desk on my way to work in the morning.
When we wake up, it goes on the radio.
I can hear a song and be instantly transported back to a time in my life that I enjoy remembering.
I think that's what I like listening to radio for, is just to stay informed on whether it's news, sports, new music, anything.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
Welcome back to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West, providing you with statewide agriculture news daily. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Now let's listen in to more featured segments.
There doesn't appear to be enough bullish news to move grain futures higher into next week, including tomorrow's crop report. I'm Mark Oppel. Today's bottom line report brought to you by Helena. A 3 to 4 cent jump in corn and soybean new crop futures yesterday, not all that impressive considering the recent pressure. Open interest continues to decline as managed fund accounts begin to build short positions now. Regardless of tomorrow's crop report, if December corn doesn't hold 480 by the close tomorrow, and November soybeans don't hold the 480, 478 level or better, it invites more selling, in our view, into next week. We think some of the trade early week was actually factoring in a steady to maybe even higher corn production number from USDA tomorrow. This is the bottom line report. Lean hog futures are trading at a $23 discount to the current cash market. That's the widest discount so far this year. It's about $5 above the five-year average of about $17 discount. Keep an eye on lean hog futures. I'm Mark Oppold, wishing you a profitable day.
An update on the USDA's Animal Vaccine Bank.
Foot and mouth disease has been kept out of this country since 1929, but if it did show up and got out of hand, it could devastate the beef and pork industries and hurt the economy overall. That's why Congress, in the 2018 Farm Bill, officially created
the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank.
Or just the Vaccine Bank, as they call it. Dr. Julie Wallen with USDA helps run it, and she told us the bank acquires and stores foot and mouth vaccine.
But we also stockpile diagnostic test kits so that we can quickly detect other diseases such as African swine fever, high path avian influenza, classical swine fever, and others.
And USDA has announced another $6 million investment for this next year. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
I'm Sabrina Halverson for AgNet West.
22 members of Congress, along with administration officials, economists, and sugar industry experts, just wrapped up the 38th International Sweetener Symposium, right in time for the Farm Bill. This year, the event focused on how Farm Bill policies support American food security. Cassie Blado, incoming chairwoman of the American Sugar Alliance and president of the U.S. Beet Sugar Association, shared with us her biggest takeaways from this year's meeting.
There is strong bipartisan support for sugar policy from leaders in Congress. They really recognize the value and contribution our farmers, producers, processors, and workers provide to the American economy.
There are more than 200 new members in Congress since the last Farm Bill. Many know very little about farm policy, let alone sugar policy. But Chair Blado is optimistic.
We have been making the point to members of Congress that Americans benefit from having domestic sugar production. And we're seeing that message really resonate with members across the aisle. In addition, organizations across American agriculture, including the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Farmers Union, agree we need to pass the Farm Bill with sugar policy intact.
Chair Blado blasted opposition to sugar policy as short-sighted.
Gutting sugar policy would lead to a dependence on unreliable foreign suppliers, which in turn would cost us American jobs, farms, and domestic food security for this essential ingredient. It also hurts sugar-using companies who depend on a strong domestic industry to provide just-in-time delivery throughout the year. Nobody wins if sugar policy is weakened.
With the Farm Bill expected to be reauthorized later this year, sugar producers are advocating for sound farm safety net programs and U.S. sugar policy.
America's sugar industry keeps this essential ingredient in ready supply thanks to sugar policy, which operates at no cost to taxpayers. Sugar producers are an important economic engine for rural and urban communities. We support 151,000 jobs and contribute over $23 billion to the economy. We are confident that a farm bill that ensures Americans have a strong domestic food supply chain includes a robust sugar policy. This supports the needs of American family farmers and workers.
Learn more at sugaralliance.org. Michael Clements reporting.
Wildfire season is underway out west. No surprise, given the time of year and climate conditions. Hot, dry summer in most of the region. What was somewhat unexpected was the late start to mass wildfire activity. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey explains.
Because we had such an abundant, bounteous wet season across the west, it has taken a few extra weeks for things to start drying out, especially in the higher elevations.
So this past spring,
for the months of May and June, it seemed like all we were really talking about were the Canadian wildfires, which have burned a record amount of forested land across the Canadian provinces and territories. But for the United States as a whole, we got well into July before we saw extensive wildfire activity.
The numbers for U.S. wildfire activity for the first 7 months of 2023, Alaska included, look like this.
We saw only 1.2 million acres of vegetation burned across the country during the first 7 months of the year, and that compares to the 10-year average of about 3.8 million acres, so less than one-third of the typical acreage burned during the first 7 months of the year.
Those numbers include an expansion of heat into northern and western parts of the region, and an increase in wildfires during the last week of July.
We also saw the development of the monsoon circulation that contributed lightning strikes, and that also started several dozen small to medium-sized fires in the southwestern U.S.
Several dozen significant wildfires were reported by early August in various parts of the West.
The largest U.S. wildfire to date is the York Fire. It's a fire burning in a desert area near the California-Nevada border. As of early August, we've seen approximately 94,000 acres of desert vegetation burned by that wildfire.
Yet containment efforts of that complex are complicated, part due to fire skipping between fuels such as sagebrush and juniper trees, and part due to recent thunderstorm activity.
One of the more interesting fires that we've seen in recent days crossing the international border, that's the Eagle Bluff Fire, which started in northern Washington and then proceeded to burn northward into British Columbia, Canada. That fire required rare coordination between international agencies fighting the fire to discuss how to approach the firefighting efforts as it's crossed the international border.
Rippey adds, one of the most destructive fires this season is an example of how even small wildfires can cause damage. The Golden Fire in Oregon
only burned a little over 2,000 acres before being mostly contained, but it burned through a populated area, unfortunately, and also a campground. According to latest numbers, we saw more than 3 dozen residences and several dozen more outbuildings destroyed by that fire.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
This is the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. We'll be back in just a moment with more of the day's national headlines and local reports when we return. But don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search AgNet News Hour or AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet News Hour. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Unused prescription opioid pain medicines can spell trouble. They can spell risk if taken by someone they weren't prescribed for, harm if accidentally taken by a child or pet, or overdose if they're not used as directed. Safely dispose of opioids before they can hurt your family. Find a drug take-back option such as medicine drop boxes. You may find these in your community, at local pharmacies or police stations. Visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now.
In today's specialty crop news, brought to you by the Almond Board of California, you can find them online at almonds.com. And today we're bringing you a conversation between Senior Specialist of Industry Relations for the Almond Board, Rebecca Bailey, and ABC Senior Specialist of Industry Communications, Taylor Hillman.
Almond Conference, we've started talking about it. It's fast approaching now. I know it's only August, but it is quickly approaching. It is back in Sacramento, correct?
That is correct. It's still a ways out, but it will be here before we know it. We are truly in full force of planning mode. But yeah, it will be in downtown Sacramento at the Safe Credit Union Convention Center once again. So we're excited to return downtown and looking forward to the 3-day conference, December 5th through 7th in Sacramento.
Very good. Exciting news this week is registration is now open, right?
Yes. So registration just opened yesterday. So we're excited to get that launched so people can start going on and registering. Registration is open at almonds.com/conference. And you just click the registration tab and that will take you directly to the page to register. Once again, the conference is free for all attendees, so it is free when you go on to register. There are some costs associated if you select any of the meals, which include the grower breakfast on Wednesday. There's a lunch on Wednesday, as well as the gala dinner on Wednesday night. So those are all paid ticketed events, but if you don't plan to go to any of those, the conference is free to attend.
Awesome. And I know the program will have the full agenda in it, but there is some stuff out now so people can start planning their experience, right?
Yes, we know people kind of want to know what's going on early so they can start planning their time in December. These things take time to plan. So we do have a general agenda that's available on almonds.com/conference, and you just click on the agenda tab. And that will take you to the agenda page, and you can kind of see what the structure of each day looks like and kind of get a general feel for what's going on each day so you can start planning your time there. When you look at this agenda, you'll notice there is no specific content on what the sessions will look like, what speakers will look like. We're working on that right now. We hope to have the official information on the website by the end of October. So make sure you keep coming back to that and checking that page out. We will also be sending out a number of communications. So if you've attended in the past, or if you're attending, or if you receive any of our newsletters, you will definitely get some information on when that final conference program is ready.
That is the nice thing about registering early is you will be added to a e-blast list that will keep everybody up to date as specific to the Almond Conference, right?
Yes, that's correct. So yeah, you want to, especially if you know you're going to be there for sure, you might as well get on there, register early so that you're in the know on all of the current up-to-date information.
Last year, we brought back sessions on Tuesday, and on Thursday, we ended a little bit early. Is that the general consensus again for this year?
Yes, for the most part, the agenda is exactly the same as last year. So on Tuesday morning, there will be some breakout sessions that kick off the conference. We will open the trade show slightly earlier on Tuesday. So that will open at 1 p.m. on Tuesday, and it will be open through the remainder of the day through the opening reception. And then, yeah, on Thursday, we will still conclude the trade show at noon to give exhibitors a chance to pack up, get on the road, and get home. And then we'll also have some breakout sessions on Thursday that will go a little after into the afternoon. And everything will conclude by 2 on that Thursday.
So again, registration is open. You can go do that at almonds.com/conference. Find out all the information there. The big date is the hotel date because those go awfully quick. Do we know when that hotel date is?
So September 12th at 12 p.m. noon Pacific time. That is the date and time you want to get on your calendar. Like you mentioned, the hotels do book up rather quickly, especially the two that are closest to the convention center. So make sure you get on at that time. The hotel information will be on almonds.com/conference, and you'll just click on the hotel tab And all of the booking information, the links or the phone number for the hotel will be available at noon on that day. And you can book at that time. Right now, you can go on almonds.com/conference to the hotels tab, and you can actually see what hotels we're blocking with this year, as well as some that we aren't blocked with, but will be available in the Sacramento downtown area. Obviously, the booking information won't be available until that September 12th date at noon. But if you want to start figuring out which hotel you want to try to get to, I recommend going on there now and start planning that out.
Awesome. Again, almonds.com/conference. That's where you can find all of this information. And more stuff will be coming out. So, Rebecca, we really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. We're really looking forward to this year's conference and just super, super grateful for this amazing industry. And just it's always just a fun celebration to get together to learn about the latest and greatest research going on with the industry. So we're just really looking forward to December and can't wait to see everyone there.
Thanks, Brian. And stay tuned as we'll have more of the day's agriculture news and farm features here on the AgNet News Hour. Don't forget, if you've missed any of our morning shows or if you simply need to catch the news at a different time, you can always subscribe to our podcast and have statewide agriculture news at your convenience. All you have to do is search our name of AgNet West on your favorite podcast downloading app. That's AgNet West. It's available on both Apple and Android devices.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section and after Dad's back injury. They helped when you were in pain, and you held on to them just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Trouble with opioids can start at home with unused medicines such as pills, patches, and syrups. You can remove the risk and protect your family. Find out how at www.fda.gov/drugdisposal.
You've been listening to the AgNet News Hour by AgNet West. I'm your host, Danielle Leal. Welcome back. We've got more of the day's agriculture news right now. Seats are open for CDFA's Shipping Point Inspection Committee. The California Department of Food and Agriculture has announced the availability of 16 seats for the Shipping Point Inspection Advisory Committee. The committee reports to the CDFA Agriculture Secretary on all matters related to the Shipping Point Inspection Program. This program provides third-party grading and certification services to the fruit, nut, and vegetable industries throughout the state, and it ensures that California's specialty crops meet identified quality standards. The program was created so that these agriculture producers, packers, shippers, and processors could follow a nationally and internationally recognized grading and certification service. Members of the committee will be made up of shippers of fruits and vegetables using the inspection certification services of CDFA, as well as one person from the public. Current vacancies include 6 member positions, 1 public member position, and 9 alternate member positions. These members will serve a 2-year commitment. If you'd like to find out more information or to apply to the committee, visit cdfa.ca.gov. And in more agriculture news, earlier this week, the American Farm Bureau Federation announced a new collaboration with one of the largest culinary school brands in the nation. Michael Clements has the report now.
Farm Bureau's Promotion and Education Committee Tuesday announced a collaboration with Culinary School Escoffier. Committee Chairman Darren Westergaard says AFBF and Escoffier will collaborate on farm-to-table cooking events, annual convention, and other projects.
It is a collaboration between the AFBF P&E Committee as well as the Escoffier Culinary Arts School. It will be used to help bridge the gap for consumers between field of pork and help our members to have the tools that they need to share their story and do so the story of agriculture.
Westergaard says the partnership brings together culinary arts and agriculture.
It makes sense for those that grow the food to be able to help teach the ones that help prepare the food. I see it educating, it's engaging, that will hopefully help members and the culinary arts students do what they need to do.
Westergaard says he's excited to see where the collaboration will go in the future.
It's exciting to be able to partner and collaborate with those that prepare the food and to those that are growing food. It's going to be exciting to see what can come out of this collaboration in the future. It's in its baby steps right now, but it'll be fun.
Learn more at fb.org. Michael Clements, Washington.
Will farmers who use cover crops keep using them after the cash incentives end? Gary Crawford talks with Rob Myers with the University of Missouri in this next report.
Many farmers who incorporate cover crops got started in it because of incentives, either cash or crop insurance discounts. The question is,
once that incentive payment goes away, does the farmer stick with cover crops?
And the answer is yes. Dr. Rob Myers with USDA Sustainable Ag Research and Extension Group, University of Missouri, telling reporters Tuesday that according to a nationwide survey of farmers,
67% said definitely yes, they're going to stick with cover crops after those payments end. Another 22, almost 23% probably yes. So we're looking at about 90% are saying they're either definitely or probably going to stick with cover crops.
And on the flip side of that,
we only had about 3% that said they would stop using cover crops, either probably or definitely, after the incentive ends.
So the role of incentives may not be so much to help farmers continue using cover crops, but rather to get them to start using them in the first place.
Myers goes on to say a new farmer survey explodes the myth that farmers won't use cover crops unless they're paid to do it.
That finding that 90% are either definitely or probably going to continue cover crops after the incentive payment ends really explodes the myth that farmers only do cover crops when they're paid to do them. And once the payment goes away, that's the end of it. I mean, it just when 90% are saying they're going to continue and only 3% are saying they're going to stop, that's a pretty strong indication that the incentive is not an issue.
To learn more about cover cropping incentives here in California, you can visit cdfa.ca.gov/OEFI. You can search the Healthy Soils Program Incentives Program for more information.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit AgNet West online at agnetwest.com. You can also stay connected by following us on our social media at AgNet West on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can also find our broadcast team of Danielle Leal, Brian German, and Sabrina Halvertson on Facebook and Twitter. Thank you for listening to the AgNet News Hour from AgNet West. AgNet West Radio Network, your primary choice for agriculture news.